RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the June 5th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by Daniel Galvan. Of course, at the beginning of the show, I always like to tell you about what's coming up here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to kick things off by previewing UFC 238, which goes down on Saturday in Chicago. Then it's going to be the interview portion of the podcast. You can hear my conversations with Darion Caldwell, Taylor Turner, Grant Dawson, and Journey Newsom. Then we are going to take a look back at what happened UFC Stockholm, or I guess we should just call it UFC retirements. Of course, we had three fighters on that fight card decide to call it a career. Then in the spirit of the big upset with Anthony Joshua losing this past weekend, we're going to lay out a prediction of who we think could be a major upset in MMA in 2019, and then we're going to wrap things up by previewing Thursday's PFL event. Of course, best way to get this podcast is by subscribing, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. Of course, one of the great ways to show your support for this podcast is leave us a rating and review on those platforms. But Daniel, we want to get right into it. UFC 238 on Saturday. And, this is, to me, there's no doubt about it. In my mind, this is by far, on paper, the best pay-per-view the UFC has put together in 2019. You got to go towards the end of 2018 to find a pay-per-view. But this is a premium product that the UFC is putting on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, man. This UFC 238 show, from the prelims to the main card, maybe not the prelims that are on UFC Fight Pass, ESPN Plus, but everything else, those nine fights. Oh my gosh, Jason, we got ourselves a fight card. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of forget what it's like to be genuinely excited for an entire fight card. And here we have UFC 238 up and down this card, from the four fights on the ESPN prelims to the five fights on the main card. I mean, honestly, you look at the top three fights, those are all championship caliber fights. Obviously, the top two are for a championship, and the lightweight fight between Tony Ferguson and could be for a lightweight championship. Wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden we see an interim lightweight title distributed or whatever. But those are great. The prelims on ESPN, as I mentioned, are great. The Suarez Ansaroff fight, and there's just so many fighters on this entire card that have fought for titles or been in main events that UFC 238, the UFC went out there and they hit this one out of the park, Jason. I cannot wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, one of the things of anyone that's ever listened to our show or listened to us every week, you know that me and Daniel are no BS type guys. We'll tell you whether we don't like a fight card or not, but this is a fight card that I'm really looking forward to, you know, sitting in front of the television set on Saturday night. You know, you look at those early prelims, to me, you know, I'm interested to see kind of the progression of Bavon Lewis taking on Darren Stewart. You look at the opening fight of the fight card, Caitlin against JoJo. To me, that's a fight that is on this card. I mean, obviously, it's a very important fight in the women's 125-pound division, but clearly, that's also a fight that was put on this card just in case Valentina or Jessica Eye don't make it to fight night. I know Jessica Eye, I saw, I guess she had some issues with American Airlines in getting to Chicago. Valentina, it looks like she's now been there for at least a week or so. But yeah, those top three fights to me are just premier. But I will say this, and I think this is kind of a good question to put out there. Outside of those top three fights, what's the most important fight? Because I feel like if I pull that to 10 MMA fans, I may get two or three different answers.
Yeah, man. I think the two answers I'm looking at here is one fight on the main card, the fight between Jimmy Rivera and Peter Yan. Simply put, these are it's a matchup of two of the best bantamweights in the world. And you could also make the case that Sterling Munoz is in this category. Between Rivera, a guy who has challenged for a title, and a fighter in Peter Yan who has displayed an unbelievable upside with his stand-up. So that to me is a very important fight in the bantamweight division. And the other one, and the fight that I would probably say is the most important, is Tatiana Suarez versus Nina Ansaroff, the main event for the prelims in ESPN. I mean, Suarez has just looked unbelievable in the UFC. In all of her fights, she looks like a future title challenger. And for Nina Ansaroff, I mean, she's really turned things around in her career, getting a win over Claudia Gadella, a major underdog in this fight. But the reason why I would consider this the most important fight is I think you can look at this fight and easily connect this fight to a future title shot in the women's strawweight division. And that's why I would consider this one, where the winner of this one could absolutely see themselves sitting pretty for a title shot.
Yeah, Tatiana Suarez versus Nina Ansaroff would be my pick, just because I truly do feel that if Tatiana Suarez or even Nina Ansaroff, they go out there and have a dominating performance, they will be the next title challenger at 115 pounds and challenge Jessica Andrade. And yeah, Tatiana Suarez, I was talking to somebody about this earlier this week, I mean, she's essentially the Khabib Nurmagomedov of women's MMA when it comes to takedowns. When you look at the fact of, you know, she had 9 takedown attempts in her last fight against Carla Esparza, where she attempted 11 of them. That's a pretty damn good percentage. She had 14 passes in that fight. You even go back to her second UFC fight where she had 13 passes. This is a fighter that is unbelievable with their takedowns. Nina Ansaroff is going to have to find a way to be able to stop those takedowns. You know, she has been taken down in her previous fight. She was taken down twice by Claudia Gadelha in her last fight. But to me, I mean, in terms of most important, that has got to be up there. You know, for me, number two in this question, and you mentioned these fights, I think it's got to be those men's bantamweight fights. And I think it's like 2A, 2B type situation. Sterling Munoz, Rivera, Jan. And I feel like the fighter that may have the most to gain on Saturday night in those two fights has got to be Petr Yan.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of Petr Yan, you look at all these four fighters, Jan, Rivera, Sterling, Munoz. For three of those four not named Jan, I think we've kind of seen what their best case scenario looks like, their upside. They've had some adversity, and they've lost against some of the top-tier bantamweights. For Petr Yan, you look at his performance against John Dodson, and it's just been progressively impressive every single time he's been in the UFC. So he definitely has the most to gain, because out of the four, he has the least amount of notoriety within the UFC. And he has a whole lot to take from Jimmy Rivera. But also, it's like, I think there's a lot of momentum in his direction for him to break through on Saturday. He's taking on a very, very tough fighter in Jimmy Rivera, a guy who I would define as just being straight up scrappy inside the cage and really fights to his opponent and is really talented. But it's a fight where Jan's fight style is going to lead him to have a whole lot of success in the bantamweight division. I mean, he's aggressive. He's going to go after it. The one concern, if you're a fan of him, is the counter striker, is maybe the wrestler type fighter. But when I look at this fight, I think this sets up real well for Petr Yan. I do think Jimmy Rivera doesn't have the tool set to put Yan in a position where he doesn't want to be. And I could absolutely see him dictating the stand up. But again, don't sleep on Munoz versus Aljamain Sterling. I mean, this is a fight between two guys who have really, really put it together. I mean, look at the resume in the last three fights for Sterling. Wins over Brett Johns, Cody Stamann, Jimmy Rivera. For Pedro Munoz, the last time we saw him fight, he sent Cody Garbrandt to the back of the bantamweight food chain.
Yeah, I would tell you, another fight on the prelims that definitely has me interested, Carl Lamas versus Calvin Kattar. Of course, I had Calvin on the podcast last week. Calvin, 3-1 in the UFC. Ricardo Lamas, I think, kind of in a way has kind of become a little bit of a forgotten guy at 145 pounds just because he's been just so up and down over the past couple of years. That one definitely has got my attention as well. And then you got Carolina Kovacevic against Alexa Grasso. Of course, we haven't seen Grasso in over a year since losing to Suarez, and you know, Carolina has lost back-to-back fights, and you know, she has also kind of hinted about, you know, maybe the motherhood maybe is something that is really on her mind, and you wonder if she doesn't get the victory here, does that kind of ultimately maybe lead her to decide to step away from MMA and move on to the next phase of her life?
Yeah, and then the other fight that we haven't really talked about is the heavyweight bout on the main card. And I think if you look at all 9 of those fights, Jason, this may be the one I'm probably the least interested in. I am more interested in Kovacevic-Grasso. I'm more interested in the Lamas-Kattar fight. But this one, I just, when I watched Tuivasa and Ivanov fight, Ivanov's not the most exciting guy in the world to watch fight. Tuivasa is, actually. It's always cool to see him, see if he's going to drink a shoey after a fight. But with these two, I don't necessarily see the upside of potentially being a heavyweight title challenger. But for Tai Tuivasa and Ivanov, I mean, this is the we lost to Junior Dos Santos sweepstakes. Who's going to rebound following a loss of that? Ivanov is coming off a victory. But I kind of do think his basic game is going to eliminate the explosive nature of what Tuivasa brings to the table, drag it out. But, you know, it is a solid heavyweight scrap, but it's definitely to me the weakest on the main card.
I wonder how many of our listeners would do a shoey if Tuivasa wins on Saturday night.
It's got to be zero, right? No, we have no listener that's sad enough. Can you imagine you're hosting a party? You know, Greg from work, who doesn't watch the UFC all too often, is there, and you're just out here drinking out of your Skechers?
Hey, come on. You know there's everyone that has got one buddy that you're like, I think he'd do it.
And he's in jail. That buddy's
look,
in jail.
There is no way you will ever see me putting my Stella in a shoe and drinking out of a shoe. There's no way you'll ever see that happen.
I mean, you got to be so drunk. And other people have to be doing it. Like, there's got to be peer pressure involved.
The thing I don't get is Tuivasa just grabbing someone's shoe out of the stand and doing it?
Yeah. Is he?
Like, that to me is nuts.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to get, like a foot fungus, you know? I mean, you're going to wake up with the warts all over your hand if you got the wrong shoe. I mean, he's got to have a prop shoe. There's no way he's taking a shoe off somebody's foot. In the crowd, right? Like, there's a prop.
You would hope so, man. But there is no way. When me and the boys get together on Saturday night to watch these fights, no one's doing a shoey. No.
Yeah, yeah. Look, MMA celebrations aren't the most well-thought-out things. I mean, look at freaking Johnny Walker. Dislocated his shoulder doing a celebration, doing the worm.
But what's worse, doing a shoey or catching the fighter's mouthpiece when he throws it in the crowd?
The fighter's mouthpiece, when he throws in the crowd, after you wash it, it's going to be worth a little money on eBay. So I'm going to go.
But you got to catch that thing, though.
That's true. That's true. When you catch a baseball, there aren't too many germs. But when you catch, yeah, that's true. You got to bring protective gloves. Yeah, that's gross. It depends which fighter. You know, if I'm catching Lagoy Ivanov's mouthpiece, I'm not feeling too good. But, you know, Henry Cejudo's. I don't know. There's just something about heavyweights that just kind of like they're just like bears. And Henry Cejudo, I feel like, you know, he's got like a tooth person who takes care of each of his teeth. So it depends which fighter.
And obviously that's a great way to bring up the main event here of Henry Cejudo Marlon Moraes. I mean, this is a great fight. This is a premium level fight. This is MMA at its highest level. And as I was last night, I was watching the countdown episode and I was watching the first two episodes of Embedded. And one of the things I wrote down about Henry Cejudo is the difference in how we view Henry now as opposed to 12 months ago. You think about 12 months ago, he's getting ready. It either had been announced or was shortly announced that he would be getting that rematch against Demetrius Johnson. And you think about how we viewed him going into that fight. And let's be honest, Bob, no one thought he was going to win that fight. And now you look at him now of what he's done going out there and defeating Demetrius. and then defeating TJ Dillashaw. I mean, our view of him is so different. And, I mean, Marlon Moraes, I feel like when you look at the run this guy has been on, particularly with his last three fights, all performance of the night bonuses, you know, only needs 3 minutes and 17 seconds to submit Rafael Sunsao. Only needs 33 seconds to knock out Jimmy Rivera, and only needs 67 seconds to knock out Aljamain Sterling, which, as I was watching the countdown show, I forgot about how brutal of a head kick knockout that was there. And, like, I feel like Marlon Moraes, he's been on this great run, but I feel like, is it wrong for me to think that this guy's just not getting credit for what he has been able to do in the UFC?
It's not wrong for you to think, but it's just because people aren't paying attention. Casual fans aren't paying attention. Casual fans don't know what Marlon Moraes has done. And that is the one pitfall of this entire UFC 238 card, Jason, is This fight has everything for the MMA fan. It is stacked. But the one thing it's missing is that huge fight that brings the casual eyeballs to the table, that forces them to learn whatever coding they need to learn in order to buy a show on ESPN Plus. I think you got to like hack and do the mainframe or something to get a pay-per-view or whatever. But that's what UFC 238 is missing, Jason, that mainstream appeal, Avengers Endgame type fight. It has the fighters. Cerrone Ferguson's a hell of a fight. Cejudo Moraes is a hell of a fight. Shevchenko, okay, that's a fight. But it just doesn't have the mainstream blockbuster. And a big part of it is fans don't know who Marlon Moraes is. Fans don't know. Marlon Moraes is a very, very violent man and very, very good and has just looked phenomenal, especially in those trio of contests. And they may not even know Henry Cejudo is one of the best guys on the planet right now. Talk about the advancement. Jason, Henry went from just another guy who Demetrius Johnson beat in the past 12 months to a guy who's starting to make a case for being one of the best fighters on the planet.
Oh, no question. I mean, and look, and you know, he's rolling with this cringy type personality out there. I don't know how likable Henry Cejudo is. I think he probably turns off some people and kind of how he does things. And this is a fight, as I thought about how it's going to play out, And I keep going back and forth on who I think is going to win the fight. You ask me on one day, I'm probably going to say Henry Cejudo. Yeah, so next day, Marlon Moraes, and it just kind of trickles down. And I look at Henry Cejudo moving up to 35 here. And, you know, typically we've seen a lot of fighters, you know, for the most part, have success, you know, moving up in weight. Of course, there are examples where it has not worked out for that fighter. And I just kind of ultimately see that Henry's got to utilize his wrestling to put himself in a best position, because I ultimately think that if this fight does play out on the feet, Marlon Moraes is going to walk away as your new UFC bantamweight champion.
Yeah, I think this is a fight that I also have gone back and forth. For Cejudo, it is about using the wrestling, because like the problem using the feet in the stand-up, which he's a really good striker, obviously. Moraes is just better. He's just more dangerous. There's obviously a chance this guy's going through. Cejudo might come away with the victory. But more often than not, it's going to end with Marlon Moraes getting the finish, I think, on the feet. The good thing is Henry Cejudo went to the Olympics for wrestling, so he knows how to wrestle. But what I'm scared about is he may get sucked into the love of the hands. Because there are most guys in this division, Henry Cejudo can go up there, stand and trade it, and get the victory. Here he can't. I don't think so. More often than not. For the health of the division, Henry Cejudo is definitely the guy who should win, because he gets it. He understands it. He wants to be a star, and he's trying his best to do it. Now, it is a bit cringy. It's not working all the way, but I at least applaud the effort. Between the security guards, all the trash talk, the snake that one time with TJ Dillashaw he brought out, the toy snake. He's trying, and he's attacking the problem to make himself a name face, and I think there's potential for him to become known. So that for the health of the division, it's important that he wins, but I don't think he will. I do think he's going to get sucked into the stand-up and trade with Marlon Moraes. And we've seen how quickly Marlon Moraes can take advantage of openings. I think Cejudo's going to give him too many, and he's going to end up losing the title. Or he doesn't have the title. He's going to end up losing this fight, and Moraes is going to win the vacant title.
It is tough to bet against Henry Cejudo and Marlon Moraes, both these guys. I mean, and Henry Cejudo is a slight betting underdog here as of Wednesday morning. Of course, betting odds are subject to change. +110, Marlon Moraes, -130. My gut tells me Cejudo walks away with the title. Brain tells me Marlon Moraes, and I'm going with my brain here. I think Marlon Moraes is going to walk away as a champion.
Wow, so they're both picking Moraes. I mean, the way I look at it is, like, Cejudo might be the more talented fighter if you did, like it was like a video game, and we're like, here's his skills in this category, in this category, in this category. I think Cejudo will probably have a higher talent level. But in this matchup, this specific matchup, I think Marlon Moraes has has a greater ability and a wider range of ways he can finish this fight in five rounds. And that's where I think, whether it be catching him in a submission, knocking him out, finishing him with strikes, I think Moraes has more chances to win. And honestly, it's just It's just watching those last three performances. It's hard to watch that and not think this is the best guy at bantamweight in the whole world. And for, you know, so I mean, it's a tough fight. It's tough to pick against Cejudo, but I mean, that's kind of why I am.
I think one of the things that you look at, and I think where if you look at your Henry Cejudo backer, is what happens if this fight hits the fourth, hits the fifth round. You know, what will Marlon Moraes be like? I mean, we've seen this guy go out there and starch dudes in the opening round, but, you know, Cejudo has been there for those five rounds, so it should be a great matchup. Of course, co-main event is a women's flyweight title fight, Valentina Shevchenko defending the title against Jessica Ai. And, you know, when you look at two of these women's matchups on this fight card, we have huge betting favorites. And, of course, one of those, Valentina Shevchenko, she is nearly a 14-1 favorite as of Wednesday morning, -1375. Jessica Ai is +900. The other big female fight that has huge odds discrepancy is Tatiana Suarez, who is a 9-1 favorite, needing to answer off a 6-1 +600 underdog. And the best chances to win, is it Jessica Ai or Nina Ansaroff? And I keep just – I don't think either one of these fighters is going to win. You know, but if you tell me who I think has a better shot, I'd probably say Jessica Ai.
And what makes you think that? Because I do disagree. But what makes you – why are you going to Ai in that situation over Ansaroff?
If she uses her grappling.
Ooh, I can see that. So you kind of look at this fight. And you look at Valentina Shevchenko, who's kind of established herself as one of the premier female fighters, and you can see the path to victory for Ai is stealing rounds, mm-hmm. is positioning and utilizing that skill.
No, totally. And you know, one thing you have to know with Jessica Ai, I mean, look, when she came into the UFC, she was fighting at a weight class above where she is. She is a 125-pound fighter. But when you look at it, she has only lost one time as a 125-pound fighter, and that was back in 2011 against Ashlyn Daly. Very early on in her career, you know, she left Strong Style in Cleveland. Of course, that's Jim Noone, as Stipe Miocic's gym. She's moved to Vegas, training at the PI and also at Extreme Couture. She's working a lot with Gray Maynard in this camp as well. I mean, look, if she cannot get this fight to the ground, 10% chance.
I might go 5. I mean, the problem with Jessica Ai is this is a fighter who's been in the UFC since 2013, and she only has 4 victories. 2 of them are split decision. Mm-hmm. That's bad. I mean, I know she's on a run. And you are right where you can absolutely see a path to victory because we know what her strong suit is, and potentially she could ride that to victory. I mean, I just think Shevchenko's going to run through her, and I think Suarez is going to run through Ansaroff, and you mentioned that. I mean, it's not like either of us are picking either of the underdogs. We aren't. But in terms of which underdog I'm picking Ansaroff, and I think it's quality competition. I mean, you look at the quality competition and Jessica Ai's path to the championship opportunity. It's not great with wins over Chikagi and Jessica Rose Clark and Faria. Whereas with Ansaroff, who we've seen her go out there and beat Claudia Gadella, and she's taking on someone in Suarez who's unbelievable and so talented, but not as established as the champion Shevchenko. That's why I think there's more room for upset. Also, there was that one time that I don't even know if it was like a countdown show where they're like needing to answer off the number 2 fighter in the whole planet or whatever or something like that. So maybe they're right. Maybe she's learning from Amanda Nunes, but she's real talented. I will say that much, and that's why Ansaroff's my pick between the two in terms of which underdog to select.
Yeah, I just don't see Ansaroff stopping the takedowns, and I just think that she's going to get beat up bad. But no, I totally get what you're saying. Of course, the other big fight on this card, Tony Ferguson against Donald Cowboy Cerrone, and I saw a stat, and I got to pull it up here on my phone, of the differences when we talk about the activity between Donald Cerrone and Tony Ferguson over since 2016. Tony Ferguson has had 4 fights since 2016. Donald Cerrone, 12.
That's amazing. That's a hell of a statistic, and this is a hell of a fight. Jason, I'm going to start off real quick with this. Which fight are you looking forward to more, Moray Cejudo or Ferguson Cerrone?
Oh, man. I would say Ferguson Cerrone just because I think you're just going to see two guys who are just going to go balls to the wall.
Dude, I agree, man. I mean, in an alternate reality, Tony Ferguson's the lightweight champion, you know? He just is. And this is a lightweight championship fight, and this is the main event.
Yeah, it's. I was watching a clip from Joe Rogan's podcast with Eddie Bravo. Of course, I think everyone pretty much knows that Eddie is the jiu-jitsu coach for Tony Ferguson, and you know, and he talked about, you know, basically saying he's like, look, you know, he wasn't going into the personal issues, but he's like, when Tony shows up at the gym, everything is about fighting. There's nothing, there's no distractions there, and you look how quickly he was able to recover from that knee injury. You know, Joe was kind of speculating that, hearing that he didn't do any sparring, you know, for that fight against Anthony Pettis. You know, on the other side with Cowboy Cerrone, you know, you think of kind of the two major changes in his life over the past couple of years. You know, change one, having a baby, and he talked about it on the Countdown show where he said, he goes, you know, everyone would tell me how everything's going to change when you have a child. And he's like, man, he goes, I thought that was, you know, didn't necessarily believe that, but he's like, man, it is so true. And then you look at leaving Jackson's and just doing his own thing, you know, having his own team. I know Joe Schilling has been a massive part of his training here over the past couple of you know, years or so. Is just how much improvements we have seen in Donald Cerrone since leaving Jackson Wink. It to me is amazing.
Yeah, it really is amazing, and it's not only leaving the camp that this rate of improvement is the fact that he's 36 years old, and it's the fact that he has so much wear and tear and so much in-cage experience. That, to me, is the most surprising thing, because he has gone on a nice run here with the wins over Perry, Hernandez, and Ali Aquinta. And the change has worked for him, absolutely. The new perspective on life has worked for him, and he has no business winning this fight, I think, inside the cage. But I think he will. I think you compare the career of Ferguson, the career of Cerrone. Ferguson should be winning this fight. He has a higher talent level. Donald Cerrone, he's scrappy, and he's a cowboy, and you can't ever count him out in a battle in a saloon. But Tony Ferguson's the more talented fighter. The thing is, the injury concerns and the stuff outside the cage, the mental issues that he deals with and the personal problems he has, I think are going to be the thing that causes Ferguson to lose this fight. I don't care what Eddie Bravo says about leaving, you know, leaving it all outside the gym. He goes in, he plugs in, he's just all MMA, all fighting. There's a receipt to be paid for issues outside of the cage. It's a growing concern.
I will give you another reason why I'm picking Donald Cerrone in this fight.
Why is that?
I love what you say. Talent-wise, he's not the best fighter in this fight. It is Tony Ferguson. I think he's a smarter fighter. He won't get into these wars that Tony Ferguson finds himself into. You know, you think about that Anthony Pettis fight. You think about, the Jackson Wink fighter that he fought on short notice and almost lost to. I can't think of his name on the top of my head. Where, you know, he nearly lost that fight. When he was supposed to, I forget who he was supposed to fight there on short notice, and right when I pull his name up, I say, "Oh yeah, that's his name." You know, back in Lando Vannetta, when no one thought Lando Vannetta had a chance that fight, and Lando nearly won that fight. And to me, I think that Donald will be the more patient fighter. And I'm not saying I feel great about picking Donald Cerrone in this fight, but I like his chances in this fight. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of people rooting for Donald Cerrone in this fight to maybe hopefully that maybe he does finally get another crack at the UFC lightweight title.
You know, there's a lot of danger. Cerrone's a smarter fighter, all right? He's not out here doing rehab by himself with aloe vera and hot yoga, okay? But the thing is, there is a danger to having success early and thinking that success is predicated all based on what's inside your head. Thinking the way I see the world is why I'm successful. Because then you stop listening to like common sense things that help you progress as a fighter, and you kind of believe your own hype. And I'm scared for Ferguson. That's where he may be. If I do it my way, this way, I'm going to be successful. And there's a chance that's not the case. If I fight my way, this is how I'm going to win a championship. And I don't think that's going to happen. But we'll see. It might happen. It's worked for him so far. Every time he's got in the cage, he's got his hand raised. But you're right. He's been vulnerable. And again, at the end of the day, we have an injury-prone fighter who hasn't fought since October 2018, fighting a guy with a whole lot of momentum and a whole lot to fight for in Donald Cerrone. So Tony Ferguson, a talented lightweight, has showcased the talent to be a lightweight champion. But I do think he loses this one.
In terms of the rest of the picks, in terms of this fight card, I'm just going to sit there and say, here's the underdogs I like to win. Man, I think Blagoy Ivanov will pull it off against Tadeu Tuivasa. Don't say I feel great about it, but I think he's got a really good shot to win. I'm going to pick him. Give me Pedro Munhoz, who's +110, against Aljamain Sterling. I'm going to go Alexa Grasso. I mean, that pretty much is a pick'em fight as well. But in terms of everything else, I think we're going to see the favorites go out there and win.
Well, dude, all these fights are close on paper. I mean, there aren't a lot of heavy dogs. I mean, you're looking to answer off, and then one other one. Jimmy Rivera is a pretty lengthy dog against Peter Yan. And I'm not picking Rivera, but if you were going to talk me into any big dog, it would be the Rivera over Yan. Because we have seen Rivera do it. In terms of the underdogs, the one I feel the most confident picking here, I will probably go with Pedro Munhoz. But, I mean, he's +110. So it's not like he's a massive dog. Maybe Ricardo Lamas. But just in terms of my picks in the card, I do think Yan beats Rivera. I do think Ivanov beats Tuivasa. I've got Suarez. I've got Munhoz over Sterling. I've got Grasso over Kovalevich. And I'll go with Lamas over Cater.
But, of course, both of us really looking forward to these fights on Saturday night. Of course, we'll recap them on next week's edition of the podcast. But right now, it's time for the interview portion of the show. You're going to hear from two fighters we'll be fighting next week at Bellator 222, Darion Caldwell and Taylor Turner. Of course, Darion Caldwell having that rematch against Koji Horiguchi, Taylor Turner taking on Heather Hardy. Then you'll hear my conversation with Grant Dawson, who's coming off a recent win inside the UFC. And then the final interview is going to be with Journey Newsom, who is on the regional scene, probably right there, potential UFC Bellator-type offers. So here are my conversations with Darion Caldwell, Taylor Turner, Grant Dawson, and Journey Newsom. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be part of Bellator 222 as he defends his bantamweight title against Koji Horiguchi. It's Darion Caldwell. Darion, I appreciate the time. I went back and watched the first fight, and as I'm watching the fight, I was wondering, does the fight go differently than it did if it was in a cage instead of a ring?
That's what we are trying to figure it out ourselves, honestly. So I think June 14th, we're going to find out.
From you know how you prefer to fight, do you think your game is, do you like fighting in a ring, or ultimately do you prefer the cage?
Honestly, I prefer a cage. You know, it's just the fact that I like to get guys up against the cage and beat them up. I like to pin guys. You know, it just comes from decades of experience. You know, of wrestling. So whenever you got 25 plus years of wrestling. And pinning guys on their back to where they can't move, you know. And that cage brings that same dynamic, you know, but more standard. It goes not only just flat on the mat, but I got the actual, you know, the octagon to help me, you know. So it just not necessarily help, but, yeah, the support. So I didn't have any support with those ropes. Those ropes weren't they were given, you know, and I like to be able to pin a guy up again, like a phone booth. If I can wrestle in a phone booth, you know, that's my game, you know.
You know, this is, not a new experience for you with the rematch, and I was just kind of wondering, is your mindset different heading into this rematch as opposed to when you had that rematch against Joe Tymanglo?
Absolutely. Against Joe Tymanglo? No, it's the same, honestly. But it's a little different from the first fight with against Horiguchi, you know. Like, I was focusing a lot on just getting my life in order to make sure I'm out of my eyes and crossing my T's outside of fights, you know. And so for me, that to be able to just get out to Japan and perform and walk away was a win in itself. But obviously, the results wasn't what I wanted. I don't like to lose, you know. I'm a real competitor, so the fact that, you know, I did lose that fight, you know, it just left a sour taste in my mouth, you know. But everything outside of that, been put playing itself out, you know, and been more sharp, more crisp. So I think I needed that fight, you know, in order to grow as a person. You know, my fight, DC, the Wolf as a fighter, you know, as a champion, you know. And so it was about making my lifestyle, you know, the lifestyle of a champion, you know.
Was there anything that surprised you about Horiguchi after being in the ring with him?
Yeah, how strong he was. He was fucking strong as shit. Well, he was doing some shit, but I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to just let that be, like, you know. But the fact that he was as strong as he was in the first or the third as he was in the first, I'm like, dang, I guess he's got fucking a lot of strength. But he's a little stronger than I thought he would be. He was like a baby Joe when it came to strength, you know. I mean, like, baby Joe was a stronger guy. I thought mentally he was a little bit ahead of most guys that I fought, you know. I remember, like, I hit him with a knee or something. I hit him with some shit, and he was just, like, the way he reacted was just, wasn't what I was used to, you know, after, like, looking out of the eye. So it was good to be able to experience that to be able to fight a guy who I know is not going to quit. He's going to literally have to shut his body off, like, you know, for him to stop. So that's exactly what I'm going to do, June 14th, is shut this man's body off.
You had an Instagram post a couple weeks ago where it's you on a treadmill and Dominic Cruz is right next to you, and you said, "Hard grind early to start the week. Dominic Cruz, Jeremy Stevens going to push you past your limits regardless." And we've seen Dominic in your corner. How have they pushed you to your limits in preparations for this one?
Well, he's a veteran who's done more than pushed himself more than, you know, most humans I know. And so, yeah, like, when it comes to workout, Jeremy and Dom, they're like extremists, you know. Like, when I like to run, like, 45 minutes, they want to go an hour and 30. I want to swim for 45 minutes, they want to swim for, you know, they want to double that. So, you know, being able to put that workload in and that, with the talent that I have, you know, is just going to be a recipe for success. So whenever you got guys like that surround you, you got to utilize them. These are tools that, you know, are a factor in my success. So.
Do you ultimately feel like this will not be the last time you face Koji Horiguchi?
Hey, no, Dominic and Jeremy aren't tools. They're my legit friends, you know. But, you know, their minds, you know, the things that they give to me, you know, the things that they, you know, the game that they just put me on, like, these are tools that you don't get from anywhere, you know. So,
do you feel
just want to clarify that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Do you ultimately feel like while this is going to be the second fight with Horiguchi, that a trilogy will be coming sooner rather than later?
Absolutely. I can see us fighting again for that rising belt. That first time we fought, it was up for grabs. Nobody was a champ, you know. This time he's coming to fight for my belt. Next time I'm going to fight for his belt, you know.
When this fight is over, is your next fight the Bellator Featherweight Tournament?
Absolutely.
You know, and I know you've posted about it on social media, and obviously, you know, you've seen what Patricio has been able to do with going up in weight. I mean, is it kind of, it right now is, and I know you constantly talk about how you're on the hunt. Obviously, this one on the hunt to even the score with Koji, but ultimately, is that you're on the hunt to be a two-division champion?
Well, here's the thing. You've seen it with myself and Horiguchi. You've seen it with TJ Dillashaw, Aaron Cejudo. You've seen it with, you know, Michael Chandler, Patricio Tipple. When you got guys that are cutting weight as opposed to guys that are coming up and as strong as they, you know, as strong as they want, like, you know, it can play a factor sometimes, you know. So it's up to you to make sure that's not the factor of the fight, you know, like, they're just taking it more forward because they have more calories throughout camp and they've been able to put in a different workload than you because you got to cut the weight, you know. So it's up to you to be able to make that shift and make it work for you, you know. And so these better weight classes are coming up and beating guys because they got all the energy in the world, you know. So it is what it is. Like, well, they got all the strength, they got all the energy. That's why when I go up to 45, I feel so much better. And so my fight at 45, my fights are better. I'm finishing guys at a higher rate. So.
Final thing, and I really appreciate the time. Madison Square Garden is a bucket list item for a lot of fighters. Was that on your bucket list? And are there any other bucket list venues that you would like to fight in before your fighting career is over?
That's a dream location to fight. That's a dream fight. You know, everybody wants to, you know, fight at Madison Square Garden. So for me to be able to fight at Madison Square Garden, my dad already called me. You know, like, man, the first day we found out, like, man, we made my dreams come true, man. Like, my son's fighting at Madison Square Garden. Like, that's, and I sat on that for a little bit, you know. And that shit really just hit home, you know. I'm like, man, I'm going back home to the Garden. And all these great fights have happened. You know, this is everything I imagined, everything I worked for, everything I wanted, you know. And so we've always, like, envisioned this. You know, we've always played this thing in our head. So we need to be able to give this gift to my dad, you know, and have it and be able to have this opportunity, you know. It's everything that I want. For real.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a fighter that's going to have the opportunity to fight in Madison Square Garden on June 14th, the Bellator show, Taylor Turner. Taylor, I appreciate the time. You know, I had a chance to talk to you when I was up in Knoxville a couple of months ago. Was it ever your wildest imaginations that you would have the opportunity to fight in Madison Square Garden?
Oh, my gosh. Was offered to me, my jaw just dropped. You know, I mean, even the opportunity to fight for Bellator first was fantastic. And then I think a little bit later in the conversation, they're like, oh, yeah, it's at Madison Square Garden. I was like, wait, what? I mean, that just took my breath away. I was like, if there is a place to be, a place to fight, I'd say that is it. So I'm super stoked about it. And yeah, I mean, dreams come true.
Was there ever a bucket list kind of venue that you said before I call it, you know, an active fighting career that you had on the bucket list?
You know, I would say now that I am fighting, I wasn't dreaming big enough because I wanted to put it on there. In the past, I'd say any of my like casinos that we fought at, you know, when we went and saw Vince and the MGM Grand in Vegas, like I always thought, oh, that's a really cool place. Like that would be an awesome place to have your name at. That's another big one. And I never even really dawned on me that Madison Square Garden could be in it. You know, also traveling around the world, I love doing that with people. Oh, those venues, that'd be cool. But no, this one, it is now on my bucket list, and I'm more than I could have asked for. So I'm super stoked and super blessed.
Obviously, you know, OSP, we all know who he is, and he's had a chance to fight in New York. I mean, did you kind of pick his brain of what it was like to fight there and maybe to kind of to understand the magnitude of what it's going to be like on fight night?
You know, I remember right after, you know, Vince fought there, and obviously he did very well, and with my husband and stuff too, just I kind of maybe talked to Eric a lot more about what it was like for him to walk out there and everything, just because he's at my disposal whenever I need him. And Vince is such a quiet person, you know, when it comes to the fame and all that stuff. So he's like, oh, it's cool, just another place, another whatever. But he even did say, though, you know, that it, you know, keep your head down, keep in the game, doesn't matter where you go, it's another place, but it is pretty awesome and cool. And my strength and conditioning coach walked out there too, and he just was floored. So they've all kind of piped in now that I have the opportunity to fight there, and like, okay, it is really cool, and okay, but still, keep your head down, it's another venue, it's another cage, same thing. So, you know, balancing that excitement with, hey, this is my job and don't get too wrapped up on it. That's a new lesson. So I'm working on that right now.
Obviously, interesting dynamic with you and Eric, husband, wife,
yes,
fighter, coach. Is there a separation at some point between that? I mean, obviously, MMA is the Turner family business, but does there become a separation at some point?
You know, we haven't necessarily mastered that one out yet. We've had a lot of discussions about that sometimes, like, okay, we have to be able to take a step away and do whatever. But our lives are, both of us are so wrapped up in it. You know, we have our own promotion now, and we have a gym, and he's my head coach, and we help coach all the fighters. I'm their, you know, nutrition coach. And so we talk about it a lot. There are times though, we do have to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, let's put that on the shelf for now, like work, let's talk about all the other stuff. And we have a great relationship and talk about all kinds of stuff. So, you know, there's options. Shut the door, please. So that's good. And you know, it's been a learning experience, I'd say. For, I can speak for myself, you know, if you want to talk to Eric, you'd be here and you can talk to him too. But there's been great parts about having him as my coach, mm-hmm. and husband. And then there's been some hard parts because, you know, he's the person I in the world that I care about his opinion the most. And when you don't feel like you're doing well or don't feel like you're, you know, living up to his name and his standards, I mean, you take it personally. And when you come home, it's hard then as a wife to be like, I didn't really do well in the gym today. Or he's like, no, you did. And he's like, no, I don't know if I did. I want to represent you. So I've actually struggled in some of my fights with that before. And that's been an important milestone for me to kind of recognize and get over and do a lot of kind of the sports therapy through it. And so it's not easy to separate it. I'm sorry for the messy answer, but that's just kind of the dirt of it. It's wonderful. And I've always said, you know, with him by my side, I can go farther than anybody else, but because we have such a tight relationship and we know each other so better, but we also have anchors that are harder to pull up at times too. So we fight harder for it, but I think it can go farther too.
And of course, things have gone great for you here in your last two fights. Now you got this one. And of course, you know, Heather, everyone knows about her boxing. As you and the team there at KMA have gotten ready for this fight, is there something that surprised you about Heather in terms of her mixed martial arts abilities?
Well, I would say you're right. First, everybody knows about her and what a great boxer she is and her pedigree. She trains with a good MMA gym too. So, you know, she's got a good background. I really don't watch the film. I let Eric do that. I let that go just because, once again, in the past, sometimes when I've done that, it's easy to almost get obsessed with your opponent and be like, what are they going to do? What do they do there? And in the end, it takes away from what I can do. So as far as our game plan sort of, or about her and her MMA, I just know that she has worked hard and she's got a good camp behind her, but I've been doing MMA for much longer. So mm-hmm. I think that's an advantage for me, to be honest. So that's the extent I know about her, but I know about me and I do well.
I mean, is it one of those things of you just prefer not to really sit there and dive deep into an opponent's film and so it's just more about concentrating on your own abilities and let the rest of your team kind of worry about what the opponent may be looking to do?
Yes, 100%. Like I said, I it is sometimes easy as a fighter to watch film or kind of get involved in it. And Eric has pulled some out and he'll tell me when he wants me to watch stuff and go for it. So we're getting away from a lot of that as far as for me. Now, there are a million different fighters out there. There's a million different types of mentalities, I think. And for me specifically, and I know a couple of the other people on our team, Eric has found that having, you know, sitting and watching too much film and having hardcore game plans isn't the best way for us to go forward. I mean, we have a game plan. We have basic knowledge. I mean, you're just ridiculous if you don't study your opponent at all, you know, and you just go into it blind. Like, that's not a smart choice either. But for some of us, there's been times in the cage in the past that we've learned that if we have a game plan and then something goes wrong, you know, go for a certain takedown, oh, I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Where I'm a perfectionist, if I didn't get it, then it's like, oh, what do I do now? And it's like, no, slow, you know what you're doing. But if I'm obsessed with the game plan. So Eric, with me, one of my other teammates, Chris Ricker, she's very similar to me in that. We're kind of getting away from the don't just do this, or this isn't the exact thing. You know, you don't have to do this combination into this. It's more of a, hey, these are her strengths. Let's watch out for this. This is where, you know, she might struggle some, and let's capitalize on that if we can, and let's go with the flow. So we're focusing on that a little bit.
I'm sure you understand that you are going to be viewed as the underdog in this fight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's 100%. Not like I'm telling you anything you don't know. But for those people that are going to outside looking in, they're going to, you know, pull up to Zone on June the 14th, and they're going to say, Taylor's got no shot. What would you say to those fans?
I mean, they can have their opinion, and I think as you listen to any interviews and what people say, or, you know, the internet probably is the worst one to go for, they're all going to say that until I go out there and showcase and do whatever, and then people are going to be like, oh, they do awesome over here. So anybody who says I don't have a shot just clearly hasn't really watched me at all either, which is fine. I don't mind being underrated. I don't mind being the underdog. And as I've watched my own journey, I've gone back and watched some of my fights and personally know where things have gone wrong. And honestly, for me, physically I've developed over time, but there is a lot of, more of the mental game for me. Sometimes people have always talked about, oh, you're too nice to fight. I'm like, no, I'm not. I love to fight this. But honestly, after a while, I realized I think I was for a little bit, because when I would watch film or you learn about your opponent, you're like, oh, they're so nice and they have a dog or they have kids and they're a person too. I feel bad hitting them. And it had to get to a point where I was like, oh, wait a second. They want to be here and I'm not doing them any favors if I go easier, or, you know, if I think about them too much. Like, everybody wants to have a good competition. So I'm only being nice if I give a good competition. So if people go back and watch some of my fights, I'd probably say they, you know, and how aggressive Heather is, and I haven't always showcased that part of it. Now, in my past recent fights, I think I've given more a glimpse of me being able to turn it on and be like, okay, we're in here, we're having fun, we're doing this. So they're going to say what they're going to say, and I hope to disappoint all of them. So,
do you at all kind of, I mean, because outside looking in, I think they would say all the pressure's on Heather. She's expected to win. It's in New York City. This is where she trains. This is where she lives. You're coming in from Knoxville. Do you view that as, say, like, that all the pressure's on her, and maybe that's something that you can capitalize in the fight?
Well, once again, if I start thinking about her mentality too much or what she's doing, for every ounce of energy I put towards her, it takes away from me. I would say, she's obviously has a huge name, you know, and she's got lots of people watching her. And I know what it's like to kind of get into a smaller cage and have some people watching you and know what it's like to put that self-imposed pressures on. And so I could assume that she's probably worked through a lot of that, being in the, you know, she was boxing and get a lot more fights than you do in MMA on a regular basis. So she's probably worked through some of that. But if it were me, and I know I've done that before, that's where you tend to put more of the pressures on yourself. It's because hometown, all that stuff. So, but somebody like her who is seasoned, I mean, like I said, I don't want to bank on that or, like, oh yeah, she's going to be mentally whatever, because she's proven to be mentally strong too. So she could be a person that turns it on really well. So, and that's where she seems like an awesome person. I'm blessed to be able to even be able to fight her, but I don't want to know too much about her. So,
and
does that
make sense? Yeah, no. And I know with your gym, there's so many fighters who, are fighting June 7th or other Valor shows that are coming up that are getting you ready, to prepare for this fight. I mean, have you found it that the people in your gym are just as excited or more excited than you are for this fight?
They bring tears to my eyes how excited they are for me. I might even start crying actually right now on the phone with you just thinking about how awesome of a team that I have. One of my coaches, Joey Zonar, and my strength conditioning coach Frankie Badia, they even like kind of put a memo out to everybody, like, everybody, you know how much we love Taylor, and she bends over backwards for everybody all the time, and her and Eric do, and they're doing all this stuff for us, and, you know, everybody, you know, make sure you, we say sweep the shed, it comes from a book that we read, but it's kind of saying you take your turn doing the dirty work too for her. I mean, and people blowing up my phone. When you want to train, I'll cancel work and I come over. My one opponent, Nick Gertz, my one teammate, Nick Gertz, yesterday at practice, looking at me, he's like, hey, do you need me to babysit, you know, or take the kids to the baseball games on Thursday? Like, I will. Because that's awesome. Honest. I mean, I'm a mother, I'm a business owner, I'm a lots of other things, and that's where it really gets added up. So like I said, I have tears in my eyes right now thinking about how fantastic they are. And they are. They're super excited for me. They've seen me be a good prospect, especially the ones who've been there longer, and kind of rise up as an amateur, you know, have my first pro win, kind of be a big thing, and then crash. You know, I let those pressures get to me for a while of what I should be. And they saw me not give up, and they've seen me, you know, train harder and mentally train harder. And so I've always wanted to lead by example. And I always say, you got to be careful what you ask God for, because he might give it. And you can't really lead by example if you don't know what it's like to fall hard and do that. So they've seen me go all over the place and keep fighting. So, yes, they are some of my biggest fans and have been amazing.
I mean, it's obviously awesome to hear what all your teammates, how they're trying to help you out, man. As someone who's involved in multiple businesses, you know, one of the things I have a hard time is how do I, you know, adjust my schedule? Hey, I need this here. For you, is it ever kind of a struggle of, okay, you know, obviously you're getting ready for your fight, you've got the gym business, you've got, you know, the business of Valor Fighting Challenge, and obviously your home life with your husband and children. Do you ever find that as a tough way to balance everything and get everything in that you want to accomplish in a day?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'd like to say that I'm getting better at it, you know, but two footsteps forward, one step back a lot of the time with how you balance all that. I'm a pretty high energy person to begin with. So I like to have lots of hats. I like to do all that. But there's only 100%. People are like, oh, you give 110%. No, there's only 100% of something. And I give it all. And, you know, when you know, we're doing construction on our gym and making it nicer and doing all that. So I'm dealing with permits in the city. And then I'm also the president of our nonprofit who tries to help the people who can't afford training MMA be able to do that. So I'm doing a lot of fundraising for that. So I'm, you know, in contact with people all the time. And there are just some days I'll sit at Starbucks for 3 hours just answering emails on that stuff. And I didn't even get a chance to think about the fight yet. And then by the time you get to the gym, you're like, I'm just so mentally tired. I can't learn one more thing. So that is when it's important for me. And I'd say my relationship with Eric really comes in probably one of the most beneficial spots, because he can read me better than anybody else. And he knows when it's like, you're smiling, but that's not like a real smile. And I'm just, you know, he's like, you're doing all the right things and saying all the right things and helping all the right people, but you need to take a bit, right, sit back, do this. And normally I fight him on it for a second. Like, no, I can do it. I'm fine. I'm great. Because you put your business hat on and your mask up and you go, and it just takes a second to take it off. So he's a huge asset in that sense, where he can read me and be like, okay, now you need to breathe. Don't train at the moment. You need a mental break, or, you know, or vice versa. Yeah. Don't push through. Do this. So, but yeah, balancing. I'm not good at balancing. I swing from left to right a whole lot. And so I can't say that's my strong suit yet.
I like to think I can balance my schedule, but there's just days I'm just like, yep, nope. I get home about 6-7 o'clock at night. My wife just looks at me and she goes, you still have to work, don't you? I go, yeah, kind of I do.
Yeah, it's there. And you're right. I mean, just because you leave, and there are times that you can like say, okay, I'm going to put the phone down. I'm going to put this out of sight, out of mind. But when you're right, when you have so many things and there's pressing, if you don't do it, it's not going to get done. So Eric is very similar. I mean, he's the mastermind behind all of our successful businesses. You know, I have no problem saying, and I understand him. And there are times like I'll have to look at him and be like, okay, I know you just got on me for working too much, but you need to, you know, stop answering this question and at least give me a time when it's going to stop. And so we kind of try to help each other out in that, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah, it's a fun life, and look forward to seeing this fight come up here on June the 14th, Bellator 222, Madison Square Garden, of course, live on the Zone. Taylor, I really appreciate time. I'm sure I will see you next time up in Knoxville, you know, up there promoting the Valor Hour. So look forward to it. I told my wife, gonna try to get her up there, because I went to a good chicken and waffle spot. I found one right by my hotel, and I was like, yeah.
Well, bring her on with you this next time, and we'll give you some list of some of our my favorite places in town. I can't eat them right now, so you can tell me about it later, how great it was.
Awesome, awesome. But, Taylor, let all my listeners know they can follow you on social media, and if there's any sponsors that you want to mention that are helping you out for this one.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, just give me a second with it. There's a couple of sponsors that I'd like to highlight. Impact Mouse Guard, I've been using them for years, but they sponsor Valor Fights and me as a fighter, so I really appreciate them. I couldn't do it. Some of my friends who just have built an RV park, well, they've owned one for a long time. The Ridge in Pigeon Forge, it's brand new. And another one who owns Country Cascade down there, they have been huge in helping my career, win, lose, draw kind of thing. Obviously, Knoxville Martial Arts Academy and Frankie's Body Shop are big. And Total Ascentwear, and then Gilliam Insurance Company. They're new to me, and they're just fantastic people I've known and contacted me. Like, we want to help you any way you can. And then there's a group called Fightanium. And then also the Welke Urgent Care, one of my clients, she's one of the owners of all that. And when I need a medical last minute because the athletic commission's like, come down, she's like, come on in, we'll get you in. So she's fantastic. And also Overhaul Karate Studio out of Morristown, Chief Overhaul and their group out there are affiliate gyms of ours, and they're fantastic. So that's good. And but yeah, you can follow us on, just look me up through Knox Martial Arts Academy or Valor Fighting Challenge. That's probably one of the best ways. And Frankie's Body Shop, and then just Taylor Turner, MMA athlete. So, but thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it. It's awesome to get a chance to share my story. So I'm very grateful.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man is now 2-0 in the UFC following his submission win earlier on this month, Grant Dawson. Grant, appreciate the time. Obviously, a great victory for you earlier this month. Of course, you had that decision in your official UFC debut, which you noted, hey, first time you had to go off 15 minutes. You go out there and get it. And, you know, you talked about, you know, you kind of everything you expect to happen in the fight happened in this fight. When as you went back and watched the fight, is there anything that really sticks out to you about your own performance?
You know, I'm my hardest critic. Whenever I watch a fight, it's really hard for me to watch a fight and just enjoy it, especially one of my own. I'm always looking at things to get better on. But I mean, I feel like, you know, Trezano was really good. He's, like I said, he was 18-0 overall. And I felt like I won almost every minute of the round or every minute of the fight. You know, he had a couple of good moments where he was sticking me with a really good jab. He cut my eye. I hurt my toe, like we were talking about earlier. I hurt my toe kicking him. But other than that, I felt like I controlled the entire first round and then dominated in the second. So I was happy with the performance, you know. My eyes healed up, my toes feel better, so I'm ready to get back at it.
Yeah, I think anyone who's ever had to deal with your toenail going back on you kind of knows exactly. Did you feel it when it happened in the fight?
No, so, excuse me. So in between rounds, I stand up off the stool and he's getting ready to say, you know, fight again. And I look down and I saw my toe bleeding and I was like, what in the world? And I was like, we'll worry about it later. Don't worry. So I didn't feel it in the moment. But when I went backstage and was interviewing backstage, it started to hurt. So, but no pain now. So we're ready to get back to training.
After the fight was over, when you were talking to the media in tennis, you talked about how it's about blending everything together, and you raved about what James Krause has done there at Glory. And James, obviously, I think, underrated coach in terms of MMA, the way people view him. Do you feel you blended everything together in the way you wanted to in the fight?
Yeah, I would say I did. When we were shooting, obviously I was shooting to try to get the takedown. I did want to take him down, but I knew it was good in the first round, at least I knew it was going to be hard to get him down. So our camp, we really worked on in the first round, him stuffing the takedown, but kind of just leaning on him and hanging on him, get his legs tired, get his lungs, you know, tired. And then I knew I would be able to take him down in the second and control the second. And then if I didn't finish him in the second, I knew I was going to finish him in the third. When I went to that shot to the body lock and picked him up, I landed right in mount, and I knew I had him. As soon as I landed in mount and I could feel he wasn't really doing the right stuff, I knew I had him.
Going into the fight, did you feel like submission would be the path to how you would ultimately get the victory?
Yeah. So in my last fight, I think I talked about this earlier. In my last fight, I was so dead set on ground and pound and just landing big punches and landing big elbows that I wasn't worrying about control. And that's how Julian was able to get up so many times. I wasn't trying to control him. I was just trying to hit him. And in the third round of that fight, my coach finally said, hey, no ground and pound. Just hold him, get the position. And when I took him down in the third, he didn't get up once. So going into this fight, I was like, I'm going to get the takedown. I'm going to use my ground and pound, obviously, but I'm going to control first. And I could definitely see, because he gives up his back to get up, which you got to do what you got to do to get up. Once he gave up his back, I knew as long as I controlled the position, I could get the submission. And that's ended up what happened.
You mentioned about August was a potential when you'd like to be back in competition. Is that still kind of the target spot for you?
Yep, that's what we told Sean. I think James is wanting to fight in July. And so, you know, I want to get him out of the way, like, because he's my coach, you know, he needs to worry about me. So if he's worrying about his fight, I don't want to take anything around that same time. But I think he wants beginning of July and I want end of August. So that all works out. And then I'm hoping for December as well.
And obviously overall, it was a great night for Glory. Do you get more satisfaction out of seeing a guy like Zach go out there and get the victory? I mean, obviously you're very happy with your own performance, but is it kind of when you see your teammate go out there and do some good things?
Yeah. You know, this is a selfish sport. Obviously I want them all to do well, but it makes me, if I could have gone first, I love it. But you know, he does really well. I was nervous for him. He does really well. And now I'm like, well, now I'm up. So got to keep our win streak going, you know. But I would rather not be on a card with my teammates so I can sit back and enjoy them fighting as a fan instead of being nervous about my fight, being nervous about their fights, you know, and hoping they do well. But it was a great night for Glory, you know. So it was a lot of fun. Honestly, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I don't think I'll ever be on a UFC card with two of my teammates ever again, you know? So it was fun to experience that.
Did it make warming up kind of a little odd for the team? Because, you know, you have fighters that are fighting different parts of the card and trying to make sure everyone's, getting the proper warm-up in?
You know, I thought it was going to be. I really did. Excuse me. I thought it was going to be, but we had so many. It was like it was almost like a practice because we had three teammates from my corner, three teammates from their corner. So we had like nine Glory people back there, and it was actually a lot of fun. Like we were all joking around. We had Kevin Kroon back there, who was a hoot, you know. And it was actually we were all just kind of joking around, and it was really lighthearted until it was time to get going. You know, then the nerves started getting like, ugh, hope Zach does well, hope I do well, hope Megan does well. So it was kind of 50-50. It was really good in some points and kind of nervous in other points.
You know, fighters always talk about there's nerves. You're going to be nervous at some point. For you, does that nerve stop like the moment they close the cage door? It's just, you know, your opponent, yourself, and the referee?
Yeah, for me, as soon as I get in the cage, the nerves don't necessarily go away, but there's an acceptance, right? So when you're for me at least, when you're walking down, you know, when you're walking out to your music and they're putting on the Vaseline and they're, you know, like checking everything in your head, it's like, I could still like, you know, not do this. Like I could still trip and fall and fake it. You know, you could get out of this, but once you get in the cage and they shut the door, there's no going back. You know, the door is shut. Your guy's looking at you. There's no turning around right now, you know? So for me, it's the nerves are always still there. But there's a level of acceptance once you get in the cage. And that's why, you know, a lot of people, like, they come up to the cage door and they do, like, the prayer hands or the cross or whatever. Like, I just get in the cage. The faster I get in that cage, the faster we can get started, the faster I can beat this dude up. So, and everybody deals with it differently.
One of the things I was going to bring up is, I mean, obviously people know your UFC debut got delayed a little bit based on what you went through. I know you can look at the negative aspects of that, of, hey, it delayed things. But as you look at now, you know, being 2-0 in the UFC, do you try to look at more of the positives of how much you were able to grow your skills in that time and to where you're at now?
You know, my coach told me, and a lot of coaches say this and a lot of people say this, my coach told me, he was like, the worst thing that could happen to this division was they give you more time to get better. And that's so cliche and so like, yeah, okay, whatever, shut up, I want to fight. But he was right. Like, the me now would crush the me back then. Obviously, I think the me in 4 weeks will crush the me now. Like, I'm getting better every day. And they allowed me to get better because, like I said, 16 months off, I didn't miss a day of practice. I went in every single day. I tried to get better every single day. And I feel like it allowed me to get better at things that I wasn't good at. You know, like when you're preparing for a fight, you want to like stick to the game plan and stick to what you need to do to win that fight. But if you're not preparing for a fight, you just kind of go in there and have fun. And you kind of, well, I want to work on my striking today. Or I just want to wrestle everybody today. Or I'm going to play off my back today. I don't do that much, but so it did help me get a lot better. There's always a positive side to things. You just got to find it. And it was hard to find it, but we did find it. I'm really happy where we're at right now. I'm living the dream. All I do is train and watch YouTube videos and play video games. Like, that's awesome, you know? That's all I do. And hang out with my girlfriend. So I'm living the dream right now, man. It was a hard road, but we got here.
Outside looking in, people would say it's got to be the lowest of the lows, right? You know, those 16 months. Or, yeah. or was it because there were so many other things going on in your life that you knew was going on, but it was kind of not at the forefront of your brain?
It was low, but it was the lowest of the low would be an injury, because then you can't fight and then you can't train. You know, my girlfriend is a fighter as well, and she's coming off of an ACL injury. She hasn't been able to train for like 6 months, so she can't fight or train. I at least got to train, you know, I got to train every day. I was healthy. I was eating whatever I wanted. There were things that I could enjoy, you know, a happy day for me revolves around training and being with the guys in the gym and the people that I love, you know? So fighting is obviously what we're working towards, but it was nice to sit back and just enjoy training. Obviously I'm so happy to be back fighting. That's why I want to fight so much. You know, we're begging for another fight now. But it was nice to sit back, not have to worry about fighting, and just worry about training. So there were highs and there were lows.
The fact that you mentioned about your girlfriend also being a fighter, how does that dynamic work for you two? I mean, obviously, I think the first part you say is you know what each other are going through in terms of this journey. But does there kind of become a point where it's like, okay, we're no longer fighters, we're just normal people, and you got to kind of forget about that stuff?
Yeah, I mean... I mean, it's fun because, like, you know, she can't complain about me not spending time with her because we're spending time, you know, at the gym all the time. She's in the gym just as much as I am. She loves this. You know, it does get stressful, though. Like, when she fights, like, I'm a mess. I'm a wreck, you know? Like, her last fight, I wanted to throw up. I was so nervous for her. It's way worse than when I fight. And, you know, like, because I can't control it. So there are things that do suck about having a girlfriend as a fighter because – I get so nervous for her, and it's like I can't do anything to help her. But I do enjoy having it because, like you said, she does understand what we're going through. But we obsess over this so much that we don't really have to shut it off, you know? Mm-hmm. Once we get back from the gym, we watch a lot of film, you know, when she hangs out. So I wouldn't say we ever really do shut it off. Like, this is, for me at least, and I believe for her, this is both of our lives. Like, we want to do this so bad. Like, this is our life.
Have you ever thought what will you be doing if you were not a fighter?
Yeah. I haven't come up with an answer yet.
Was there a dream job growing up?
I wanted to be president, so no. No, I wanted to play football when I was a kid. I told my dad I was going to be on the Green Bay Packers, and then I realized I wasn't good at football, so... MMA was the backup.
Was the family always on board with you being a fighter?
I mean, I wanted to be a fighter when I was real young. So I started wanting to get into it when I was like 15. And whenever a 15-year-old kid comes to you and says, Mom, I want to be in the UFC, you know, like, what do you see? You say, okay, sure, cool, no problem, you know. And now I'm in the UFC, so... I would say that they had an adjustment period for sure. Before my first fight, my dad told me, he was like, you've been training really hard for this fight, my first amateur fight. And so I can actually see you winning this fight, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And he's like, okay, we'll see. And then I won. And he's like, all right, do you, man. So they've always been supportive, but I'm sure there was adjustment period.
And of course, everything's going great for you. We look forward to seeing that fight. Next fight, maybe it's in August at a UFC event. Grant, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know where they can follow you on social media and those sponsors that have been along the ride and helping you out.
Man, guys, just follow me on Instagram. I'm trying to get more followers on Instagram. So follow me on Instagram, Grant Dawson, KGD. That's really all. I'm on Facebook a little bit, Grant Dawson, but that's all I got.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who recently picked up a victory at FFC 36. He scored a knockout victory. Journey Newsom, who's now 9-1 in his career. Journeyman, I appreciate the time. Obviously, a great start for you. Looking at your Tapology page, you've been at this fight game since 2013 when you made your amateur debut. So when did the actual martial arts journey begin for you?
I'd say it began probably like around 2006, I want to say, when I first started. Like 2008 it started. I initially got into it for, self-defense type of scenarios until it turned into, I'm actually pretty good at this. Let's try to make this thing career. This was my head coach who kind of noticed me and noticed that I was kind of a natural, and he picked up the first fight for me, and we've, been going on ever since.
What do you remember about that first amateur fight?
The anxiety of it all. The lights. Everybody's beat him up, fuck him up. That's pretty intense your first time, especially when you're not used to it. But that's definitely the first thing, or the only thing that I remember for sure is just that that anxiety of, I'm actually in the fight, it's actually happening,
And one of the things I think that anyone that will stick out to anyone when they look at your amateur and professional record is that the only two defeats on your career are against two fighters who are now both in the UFC, in Ricky Simon and Benito Lopez. Is there a part of you that's a little bit, that's the goal? Hey, I want to get to the UFC so I can kind of get those back.
Dude, I am chasing those guys for sure. A lot of respect to Ricky and Benito for sure. And they're both undefeated fighters, which is a good thing. I lost against undefeated fighters. Ricky was a decision, unfortunately. Benito was a TKO. But, there's a difference between both of those fights. Both of those I feel like I really could have won. I know Ricky's definitely has stepped to like another pedestal, with his training and everything. And, it seems like he's gotten away from me for sure. Cause he's getting really, really, really good. And now he's fighting Yoel Romero, so it's awesome. I definitely respect him, but I am, it feels like I'm chasing him. And with Benito just attacked me. Benito attacked me a certain way that I just didn't recognize. I'm kind of the big dog, and I'm not trying to sound cocky at all, but I'm kind of the big dog at my gym, so I'm usually the one that's pressuring people, and that's kind of what happened with me and Benito pressured me, and I just wasn't used to it. Now that I know that type of feel, it would be awesome to get a rematch with him, but it seems like I'm gonna have to wait for my shot at the UFC to even try to touch these guys. But it is it's good. It's good that I lost against two undefeated fighters, both of them are in UFC. I just feels like I'm chasing them right now.
But, of course, everything's going great for you. And one of the things that Ed had mentioned to me, he sent me this quote where you said, I like fans to know I'm a man who came from nothing, in and out of foster care, all throughout childhood, working past the everyday excuses others use to why they're not where they want to be. I want them to know I'd rather die than not giving this life every ounce of energy I have in me. And I feel like there's a lot of people that could definitely relate to what you want to show everyone. Is there part of you in this mixed martial arts journey is you feel like you can be an inspiration to younger kids that are going through the experience that you went through earlier on in your life?
What was the question again?
Do you feel like you can be an inspiration to kids who are going through what you went through and kind of show them there is a path to making your life, you know, better than what it may be currently?
Yeah, I definitely hope that, you know, people who read my interviews or watch my interviews or even, you know, just look at stuff that I post about inspiration, I hope that they feed off of that because, you know, if you're in and out of foster care and, you know, your parents are, you know, aren't the best influence on you, it's kind of hard to sit here and get motivated to try and accomplish the goals that you want to accomplish. And I really hope that I inspire the people who are in those types of situations or worse to just keep moving forward and just not to give up. That's definitely like my main focus on kids these days. You know, I work with a bunch of kids at my gym. I do some coaching for the kids, and it's definitely hard to sit here and try to you know, teach them something that they have no experience of. You know, kind of like they have this idea of life, but at the same time, you know, they're too young to actually know, you know, the consequences of things, and, you know, it's just bad decisions that kids make, and I'm just trying to lead them away from that, those bad decisions, by giving them my experiences, you know, the stories that I've had over the years. But I definitely hope that I inspire kids, inspire anybody, you know, just to keep pushing forward. Like, I know it's hard. You just have to deal with the stress right now. You know, stress is just, stress is temporary, you know, and people just drag it on throughout the day and they let it hang over them, even when they get home, and it just leaves them unmotivated.
One of the things I was talking to a nerd fire about this, and they were talking about how they teach kids classes, and they said one of the things in teaching kids is you got to have some patience. Is that something you have found yourself of learning how to be patient when you're trying to teach, you know, someone the inner workings of martial arts?
Yeah, you definitely have to have patience with kids, or even with adults. You know, you just got to have patience with them and, you know, just try to lead them in the right direction.
As I mentioned, everything's going great. You're coming off that first round knockout at Final Fight Championships 36. What is next for you? And is there a timetable when your next fight could take place?
I'm not too sure what's next for me. Basically, what we're going at, I have Iridium as my management company, awesome company. Jason House, he did a really good job with, you know, running things with that fight with FFC. Right now, I feel like short notice tough fights are going to take place, you know, around the next couple months. And I'm just trying to stay focused and stay ready just in case they hit me up like they did with FFC. Because FFC was a short notice fight as well. And I feel like almost, you know, all big stars, UFC stars, Bellator stars, they kind of have that period where we don't know when our next fight is going to be. We just have to kind of stay ready and look for that big opportunity, just wait for that big opportunity to come. But we have to kind of stay ready, and this is the main time where I need to stay ready and focused on that next fight. Who is it going to be? I have no idea. Is it going to be a short notice fight? It's, you know, it's looking like a higher percentage rate that it is going to be a short notice fight. But if it's, you know, if it's a couple months away, then that's, you know, that's perfect. It'll give me time for a fight camp and everything. Get me well prepared and more motivated to sit here and get a job done.
And there was my conversations with Darian Caldwell, Taylor Turner, Grant Dawson, and Journey Newsome. You know, Daniel, I thought one of my big takeaways, particularly from the Darion Caldwell interview, is how much different the rematch is going to be next week between him and Koji Horiguchi, mainly on the fact that it's in a cage and not a ring. Because the ring is so striker-friendly. It is not grappler-friendly, where in the cage, it is very grappler-friendly, especially when you go back and watch that first fight between Darion and Koji, how much of the grappling was against the ropes.
I think if Caldwell wins, the rubber match should be like in a half cage, half ring environment, you know. But that is such a great point. I'm looking forward to Caldwell Horiguchi. As soon as that fight was booked, the rematch was made, I checkmarked it and started, because that's a fight between two of the top fighters in the planet, especially non-UFC related. So a good interview, Jason, and can't wait to talk about that.
By the way, speaking of next week's podcast, scheduled to join me will be Bellator 222 fighters Juan Archuleta and Ricky Bandejas, which gonna bring up to both those guys. You know, of course, you know, Juan has fought 35 and 45, and he's got a 45-pound fight next week. Bandejas, maybe are these two guys who are trying to get into that 145-pound tournament. Darren Caldwell mentioned that as well. So that'll be on next week's edition of the show. By the way, be sure to head over to themareport.com. Got interviews up for Friday's LFA card. Natan Levy, Desmond Torres, also Anthony Garrett, and I mentioned Rakeem Cleveland. Of course, we'll talk about PFL here in a little bit, so be sure to check out that at themareport.com. But right now, we're going to discuss kind of our takeaways from UFC Stockholm. I guess part of that takeaway is definitely got to be about the retirements we saw, but. You know, and obviously I think the biggest takeaway is kind of, you know, twofold, Daniel. And to me, it's A, Alexander Gustafsson retiring. But I think, and more importantly, it's how great Anthony Smith looked.
Yeah, I guess let's start the conversation there. Because so often when Anthony Smith wins, the conversation is always about, damn, that guy he beat sucked. Like, that's usually the conversation revolving with Anthony Smith. And he was good, man. Round one. Gustafsson won that round, and Gustafsson didn't look – he looked fine in round one. Smith took it to him, and not a whole lot of guys can stand on the feet and win a round with Alexander Gustafsson, but that's exactly what Anthony Smith did. And what Smith is so good at is just seizing things when he sees an opportunity. In round four, he saw an opportunity in the scramble. Gustafsson gave him his back. Smith brought him down, and he locked on the rear naked choke. Anthony Smith is a top-tier light heavyweight. I did not think we'd be having this conversation. I did not think we'd be talking about Gustafsson being retired. But kudos to Anthony Smith. He went up against one of the top light heavyweights in the division, and he retired.
I thought Gustafsson looked off right from the start. It just looked like he wasn't all the way there. His third round clearly was his best round. You know, great round, and maybe if he has – you know, additional 30, 45 seconds. Who knows? Maybe he gets to stop his victory there, but he does it. And then, of course, you know, kind of a sloppy attempt at a judo throw in the fourth round ultimately leads to the end of the fight for Anthony Smith. And, you know, and the fact that he announced his retirement right after the fight was over, you know, you really sit back and maybe question of, you know, was that something already in the mindset of Alexander Gustafsson? Was he already kind of thinking about retiring? And I tweeted this, like, I know we should never believe retirements in combat sports. There's countless examples of this, but I look at Alexander Gustafsson and I tend to believe him here. And here's why: is this is a guy that's been the top of the division, and I don't get the sense that Alexander Gustafsson wants just be the guy that just hangs around, you know, to get a payday.
Jason, I disagree with you. I don't believe him. All right, listen, Listen, man, what are you doing here? We're talking about MMA retirement. This guy is 32 years old. He's sad he lost. He's sad he's not good anymore. Maybe he's going to retire. He's going to go to Arboga, Sweden, or Stockholm, wherever he lives, and he's gonna watch some movies, watch some Netflix, and he's going to be 33 years old. He's going to get his ass back in the gym. He's going to start realizing he can beat all these bums in the gym, and, oh, man, maybe I can make a comeback. And he's going to be 34. The card's going to be UFC on ESPN plus 237 because I can't believe this was UFC on ESPN plus 11, by the way. What the hell? There's been 11 of these things already? And he's going to come back age 34. Book it. I will say, I get what you're saying. It seemed really well thought out. Talk about mentioning it. Before the fight, there was a comment out there where he said, if I lose, I might as well retire. So he did say that before the fight. And it was on his mind. I get what you're saying. But, man, fool me once. I mean, shame on me. Fool me 570 times. I'm not buying it. Gustafsson's
one of the things that we did say last week on the show, I said it was – will a light heavyweight contender please stand up, please stand up? And, well, Alexander Radish did that. Just a brutal head kick knockout. And right when the knockout happened, I was like, man, never want to be the person to say it, but Jimmy Manuel should retire. Well, that's what he did.
Okay, that one I believe just because the age is there. Yeah, he should because that head kick, I mean, was just brutal. It was violent. We definitely needed a 205 contender to step up, especially after the bout between Ozdemir and Latifi was canceled. So that took out one of the matchups. And Alexander Radish, I mean, he looks unreal, just incredible. The fight was less than a minute and a huge head kick. I mean, he timed it perfectly. And Jimmy Manuwa, you know, it was just a bad, bad loss. And he ended up retiring, a day or two after, I think. And, Alexander Radish, sign me up for more fights. I mean, God, he just looked great. It was just a phenomenal performance. Him and Anthony Smith just looked unbelievable in their performances. And, yeah, we had three guys retire.
Yeah, Nick Hine being the other one. And, you know, the thing with that fight is you saw vast improvements in Frank Camacho. You know, he had left his family in Guam. You know, went and spent 8 weeks at Team Oyama, lived in the fighter house, and you saw a completely different fighter. And when you talk about there are fighters that maybe have to look at changing things up in their training, you know, a lot of people have mentioned about Kevin Lee recently. Maybe Kevin Lee needs to change up his training. Frank Camacho looked like a completely different fighter. This was a guy that, you know, there were times that fight that, you know, the previous mindset of Frank Camacho would have been, you know, bite down the mouthpiece and start, you know, flinging away punches. But you saw a difference to me. Like, to me, he was my third biggest takeaway was just the improvements we saw in him.
I like that, man. That was a great performance, and he really had a killer instinct. My third biggest takeaway, and I also don't want to skip over the Amir Khani Fishgold fight, which is a good fight, and Amir Khani looked solid. A lot of trash talk and heat between those two, and he got the Anaconda choke. I don't want to skip over that one, so I just had to mention it. But my number three takeaway was also on the prelims, Leonardo Santos. I mean, this guy's unbeaten in 10 years. He went up against Stevie Ray and Santos. His strong suit is his grappling, but it was his stand-up that got the victory here. Just, it was like he was a sniper in the cage and sniped Stevie Ray with a strike and a punch and knocked him the hell out. Leonardo Santos in the lightweight division. I mean, the big problem for Santos is he is 39 years old. So the age is there. He's been a martial artist for a very long time, but I still have no idea where his ceiling is. And he was the third biggest takeaway.
Yeah, that was my
number
four takeaway. And man, poor Stevie Ray, man. You're going to have to lift that knockout the rest of your life.
Yeah, if he can remember it.
And then Leonardo Santos going all Forrest Gump on us and running out of the building.
He could be running to this day. I mean, that's why he may be in such good shape. He's 40 years old.
Yeah, but like you said, I have no idea what his ceiling is.
Yeah, I know. And he better get it tested soon because he's 39. He's not going to be 45 years old still doing this in 6 years, so sign me up for a big-time lightweight fight for Leonardo Santos.
I'll tell you another takeaway, and this will be my final takeaway from this event, is what Tanya Evinger has not been able to do in the UFC.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, if I was going to talk about any other fight, that would have been it. Because you look at Tanya, her strength is her grappling, and Lena Landsberg in that fight dominated the grappling aspect of this fight. When Evinger had some success, Landsberg responded by putting her on her back and landing ground and pound. So for Tanya, I mean, she just, in this women's bantamweight division, a very vulnerable division. I know Evinger came into it with, you know, as an Invicta champion, I believe. And yeah, she just looks like a fish out of water here. And I totally get your point here. Landsberg looked good, and Evinger did not.
Yeah, I would think that Tanya Evinger, her days in the UFC are likely over. But that is UFC Stockholm. Of course, you know, we mentioned about UFC 238, which is coming up here on Saturday night. And, of course, the UFC train is just going to roll right along later on this month when we got the fight night card there in South Carolina, headlined by Naoto Minkano and the Korean Zombie. So that'll be up here later on this month. But, you know, of course, we had a major upset in boxing this past weekend. I don't think any of us saw Anthony Joshua go out there and losing. It was funny as I was out at an event that we my personalities here had locally, and me and my buddy were out, and we had to zone up at the bar watching a fight, and I forget what round it was. I look at my buddy Tracy. I go, he's gonna lose. I forget what round it was, but it was very clear that thing was turning around. And Daniel, you brought up this great topic of, you know, what could be the huge potential upset that could happen in the UFC at some point this year. And there is one fight that came to my mind.
Okay. I think we might have the same one. Here is my fight that I'm picking, and it hasn't happened yet. And I'm not even going to say this year. I'm going to say the next 12 months. I'm changing the game, Jason. I'm gonna book a fake fight, and I'm gonna tell you this is the upset. Okay, Johnny Walker over John Jones. That's my upset. That's my. At the end of the year, he's gonna get another fight against a top 10 light heavyweight. He's gonna look great. He's gonna get a title shot. Because when I'm looking at an Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua type upset, I'm talking huge odds, and I think Jones will be a big favorite in that fight. Huge favorite. So that's my hypothetical pick. Johnny Walker. Now, there's one in the books that I have penciled, and I think it might be the obvious choice, but I'm going to see if you picked it. Which one do you have? Yeah.
He shouldn't be underdog. I will tell you, I've talked to some people that have and I've brought this fight up to them, people's opinions that I trust, and they're like, Jason, Dustin Poirier's takedown defense is a lot better than people think it is. And with Khabib and the fact of it'll be his first fight in 11 months, I think clearly there's going to be some internal pressure on him just fighting in Abu Dhabi and what that could mean for that region. And I don't know if I'm ready to go on a limb and say my pick in that fight will be Dustin Poirier. But, even though, you know, Khabib is only a 3.5-1 favorite, I think people's view of Khabib as a favorite in that fight is much greater than that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this fight should have closer odds. I know Khabib is unbelievable with his wrestling, but this fight jumped out to me just because Poirier is incredibly, incredibly talented. He is one hell of a challenger. And I love this pick. This is the real fight I would have picked. So I'm in agreement. And you are so lucky, by the way, that you saw that live. I didn't. I saw it on Twitter. I wasn't watching it. And I saw it on Twitter. I was like, damn it. Because this was just not a boxing fight that was on my radar. I usually watch Joshua fights. But this one, I just didn't realize what was going on. And I like all the boxing guys who like put on their glasses. Like, well, actually, according to my calculations, Andy Ruiz was the favorite. It was like, shut up, all right. Dude looks like my dad, and he beat a model. So, I mean, get your calculations, throw it out of the way.
Like, all this right, is the ultimate, crazy. And I grew up as a boxing fan, but that whole situation is also what's wrong with boxing. It's too much of – because, look, that was a setup fight. Let's not kid yourself. That was a setup fight for Anthony Joshua, potentially set up a fight against Deontay Wilder. And I just feel like in boxing – and I'm sure there's boxing people who hate me will say that I'm saying this – is we have too many of those type of fights instead of the fights fans want to see.
That's why I wasn't watching that fight. Because Anthony Joshua should be appointment viewing television, but so many boxing fights aren't interesting because it's A side versus Z side. And I know what's going to happen, so I don't watch them. I probably would have been watching this fight if there were more competitive fights. And the unfortunate thing is boxing's going to win. Joshua Wilder is going to happen. It's going to make a lot of money. Boxing can thank MMA for this. Because, you know, for a while in boxing, you lose, it didn't matter that much. But there was a period in the 2000s and early 2010s where it was all about being undefeated for some reason. And I don't know where that obsession came with. Maybe with Floyd Mayweather, obviously. So boxing, usually you rebound from a loss, you're still a star. We saw that all the time. But for a few, like 10 years, it was all about being undefeated, having the O. And if you lose, you lose your mystique. But as a culture, I think we've rebounded. I think you can have a big loss, still be a star. So for Joshua, that fight with Wilder still isn't dead in the water. I think if he beats Andy Ruiz, people are going to care about him still. For Wilder, though, he's got a big fight against Ortiz, and he's got a big fight against Tyson Fury, so he may end up with a loss before then. But, yeah, man, I mean, that's the biggest problem with boxing is they put on fights I don't care about.
Yeah, Golovkin fighting on Saturday. I think he's like 8, 9, or 10-1 favorite. Doesn't exactly intrigue me to turn on DAZN on Saturday.
I mean, but if you're DAZN, it's like this is the worst – well – actually, this is a pretty good scenario.
But you're spending so much money with these boxers. Like, you don't.
Yeah. Well, you don't want them to lose again. You don't
want them to lose again. But you don't want setup fights. You want big fights that people are going to get that DAZN subscription for.
I agree with you, man. There is so much politics in boxing, though, that those handlers or those fighters aren't going to let them do it because it's all about preserving the OJ.
I know. It's just ultimately my frustration with boxing just because there's certain fights that you definitely want to see. But in terms of fights this weekend, we have got the PFL event, light heavyweights and heavyweights on this card. Reasons to watch. You got anything for me?
This card sucks for sure, man. These are the weakest tournaments of the entire card. But I'll give you one, Jason.
He was the one name I had written down.
Yeah, so sorry for stealing your thunder. We can share him. We can share him. I'll start off. Undefeated in the UFC. Left to go to PFO to get a payday. The problem is he is a middleweight, but he's just been an unbelievable prospect. Wouldn't be surprised if he goes out, wins the PFL tournament, gets his $1 million, and goes back to the UFC. Why do you have Jordan Johnson? I mean,
obviously, we saw what he did in the UFC. Undefeated guy. You know, a nice test for him taking on Grisham in this matchup. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, other reasons to watch, look, I think that we'll see Vinny Magalhães go out there and do what Vinny Magalhães does. You know, Alex Nicholson, I mean, look, he's going to put on a fun fight. He'll be a part of the prelims on ESPN2, you know, and, you know, Rakeem Cleveland, who I had a chance to talk to last week, I thought it was a really kind of fascinating conversation I had with him. You know, of course, he lost to Vinny, you know, last year in the light heavyweight tournament, and he said, you know, look, it caused him to get back into the gi and work his submissions and, you know, also kind of talked about, you know, the fact of when you look at these PFL events, you know, you know, at the end of the day, it's about winning, and you can't try to go out there and force something that is not there. I mean, you know, one guy that's on this card on Thursday night is Jared Rosholt, and I just don't understand why PFL's in that business because you know what Jared Rosholt is, and people are not going out of their way to watch Jared Rosholt go out there and wrestle somebody.
Yeah, and he might win this whole thing. He might just do it because he has the ability to do so. He's not super exciting, but he has the wrestling to take guys down and outpoint them. And I mean, there's a reason why he's one of the more talented fighters on this card, and he's on the prelims and not even the future fight on ESPN2. So, I mean, I get it. There's more value on the ESPN2 prelims and other cards because it is ESPN2. But for Jared Rosholt, it's just not a guy I would probably put in my tournament just because he is a boring wrestler. But he's probably going to be real successful. I mean, on the flip side, like the type of guys you want, and another name I'll mention here is Muhammad Darice. He's taking on Kelvin Tiller. Darice undefeated, coming off a finish over Mike Kyle, and his victory has been real exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing him fight. And then the other fight that I will also briefly mention is Satoshi Ishii. I remember watching him debut in Dream and Dynamite in Japan in 2009, 2010, and he came in as a gold medalist in judo, I think, and a big-time star. He was ultimately set up to lose to Fedor, and he's still stuck with the sport, reeled off 6 consecutive victories. He's fought in Serbia, Japan, Poland, Germany, and Austria. I think this will be the first time he's ever fought in the United States, and I am looking forward to seeing Ishii and how good he is or how bad he is. I'm sure he's pretty skilled and he'll probably get away.
Yeah, it's you know, but it's not exactly appointment television watching. You know, I will say this: if the NBA Finals was on Thursday night and not Wednesday night, yeah, I definitely would not be watching. But I do know they'll have Game 5 of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals will be on Thursday night, so it'll really be the competition. But yeah, it's. You know, there's been, you know, the first two PFL events of the year, I think you really looked at and you had a multiple reasons. This is one of those ones where, but I think it's also an indication of where MMA is when we're talking outside the UFC and Bellators of the world, of what heavyweight and light heavyweight looks like.
Yeah, it's a good indicator. We call it how we see it. We'll tell you when it's a good PFL card. This one isn't. We're still going to watch this damn thing, and we're still going to tell you who sticks out. But maybe, you know, the heavyweight, light heavyweights outside the UFC and even inside the UFC are lacking. But maybe, I mean, we have several fights in here featuring several fighters that I don't know anything about. And it is a common refrain I mention when we talk about PFL is you never know. There may be one of those guys I don't know anything about that will be a star or will be at least incredibly talented. So that is exciting to see if one of those guys will come out and assert himself in a division that desperately needs talented fighters. Well, I think that's
one of the challenges that PFL has pretty much every event is just telling the stories of these fighters and getting people interested in those fighters. So that'll be on Thursday night, ESPN2, and also on ESPN Plus as well. But really looking forward to UFC 238 coming up this weekend. Later on this week on TheMMAReport.com, myself and Pete Rogers Jr. will have our DFS show, trying to help you win some money on DraftKings on Saturday with UFC 238. Plus, going to have some other interviews up there, as well as Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series starting on later on this month. So going to start having some interviews up with fighters every part of that series coming up here. One of those fighters, Jorgen De Castro, had a chance to speak with him last week, so be on the lookout for that. Of course, a great way to support this show is by rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts. Always appreciate when people do that. Of course, we'll be back next week to recap UFC 238 and get you ready for Bellator 222.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week on Sitting Ringside, one third of the All Elite Wrestling broadcast team, fresh off of Double or Nothing. Please welcome Alex Marvez.
I'm not a WWE guy, Dave. I'm not a fan of the McMahon family. I admit it. I'm just not. I don't support the product. I don't subscribe to the network. I don't watch Raw. I don't watch SmackDown. I don't even watch NXT, even though I know there's a lot of great wrestlers there. I just don't want to support anything to have to do with the McMahons. I'm just very candid with you. I'm not a fan of them as human beings. So that being said, you know, I just lost interest in wrestling. But, you know, thanks to Tony Khan, who, again, my worlds collide, you know, his family buys the Jacksonville Jaguars. He introduces himself to me. He's like, hey, I read you growing up. You know, and I know your ties to wrestling. So obviously we had ties with football, but then we continued to build a friendship from there, you know, and a real strong friendship, you know, outside of both of our worlds, but pro wrestling came back in. He's like, look, I know you're not into the product today, but, you know, why don't you watch a little New Japan and tell me what you think? And Dave, sure enough, I put on Access TV one night. This was about, I don't know, 2016 or so. And I see this guy wearing Michael Jackson pants, you know, the red pants and a black leather jacket. And he's got his hair sort of shaved on one side and he is shimmying on his way to the ring. And I'm like, what the heck is this? But I can just sense the charisma this guy has. It's Shinsuke Nakamura. And it's Shinsuke Nakamura against Hiroshi Tanahashi. That was what was airing on Access. And I'm like, you know what? This is great. This is really great. If this is what pro wrestling is like nowadays outside of WWE, I can maybe get back into this. Start watching it, start getting back into it. Tony and I get together in 2017 in Los Angeles. We attend the first New Japan show held on U.S. soil. It was very special for both of us. You can even see us on the broadcast in the front row cheering everything going on. We went both nights, had an incredible time, got to bond, hang out, etc. And down the line, Tony said, I'm going to be starting a wrestling company, and I want you as my announcer. And I, look, you get an offer like that, you're not turning it down.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.